Welcome to the Deck Check, episode 14. Today we got Keith Rong, who just won a preliminary Pro Tour qualifier with Jeskai Black. If you don't know Keith, he has won Star City Games Open Top 8, two Top 16s. He won one of TCG Player's 5Ks, Top 8ed another, and now has his second Pro Tour preliminary qualifier victory. He's going to be talking to us about Jeskai Black. It's the new hotness on the standard scene, and he's going to be walking through what he played and what he's going to be doing going forward. The Deck Check is hosted by ShufflingRandomly.com. Check it out to see the show notes for any of our episodes, deck lists, strategy, analysis. So check it out, ShufflingRandomly.com. We're also on MTGCast, another great site where you can find other Magic the Gathering podcasts. You're probably listening to this through them. Thanks so much for joining us. Here we go.
And then just sit on Ocho's Eyes Command and dig through time.
Monastery Mentor. I notice that's not in your list. 4 Mantis Rider, 4 Soulfire Grandmaster, 2 Dragonmaster Outcast.
Gideon down to 2 and then just kill Gideon. I don't think any other card I could have drawn could have been easily that good.
All right, joining us today is Keith Rong. Jeskai Black preliminary Pro Tour qualifier winner. Out in Massachusetts. Keith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Keith, tell us about this Jeskai Black deck that you played and what's going on there.
So Jeskai, it's basically a Jeskai aggro deck from the previous standard. And the main black card that added is Crackling Doom, which is just very good against the majority of the format. A lot of the matchups that were tough in the past, for example, Abzan Control with Siege Rhinos and obviously Esper Dragons with Dragonlord Ojutai, those matchups are actually positive now, which is just kills all of them. They can't even protect their creature. It just makes them sacrifice their highest power creature, and it's always going to be their best creature. And that's why I think this deck is just very powerful right now. You get a lot of powerful sideboard options too. You can play Murderous Cut, Colligan's Command, and I think the best card in standard right now is just Jace Vryn's Prodigy, and that's what we get to play.
Yeah, I see going down the list, you're playing 14 creatures, or at least in the list you were playing at the PPGQ. Yeah. I see 4 Jace, 4 Mantis Rider, 4 Soulfire Grandmaster, and 2 of the Dragonmaster Outcast.
Right.
Are those numbers that you're going to keep going forward?
Yeah, those are definitely the creatures that I'm going to play moving forward. Definitely one of the ones that doesn't get enough credit is Dragonmaster Outcast. I think that's basically a 1-mana instant speed Stormbreath Dragon. You can just end step Ojutai's Command, bring it back from your graveyard to play, and then on your upkeep you just get a dragon, and then if they don't answer it, you just keep making dragons and easily takes over the game really quick.
Yeah, I wanted to play that in my Teemer Dragons list, and we weren't sure, me and Matt Wall, when we were testing if it was worth it. But after just a few games of seeing it and just realizing I'm only spending the 1 mana on it, and it's worth it. It's much better with Ojutai's Command because you can bring it back. So, exactly. I mean, things like Kolaghan's Command as well do help you out there, but just being able to bring that back is really huge.
And one card that I know I've seen a few other Jeskai lists playing is Monastery Mentor. I noticed that's not in your list. Is that something that you tested out and didn't like, or what's the deal there?
So I think part of the theory that I've heard regarding Monastery Mentor, it's really good if you build around it, and it's really good if you have other good cards. But, for example, if you mulligan or if your hand is less good, it's kind of a weak card on its own. It's actually almost like the opposite of Goblin Rabble Master, which if you mulligan to 5, for example, it's just your best card, and it can easily just win a game on its own. Whereas Monastery Mentor, you need a lot of support around. You need a lot of instant sorceries and non-creature spells just to cast so that you get the value from it. And if your hand is, 3 lands and one other spell, it's not going to be very good. And I kind of wanted to make my deck efficient where every card is good on its own. So that's kind of where I am with Monastery Mentor. And I'm not a big fan of it, but I can see that a lot of other people played it over the weekend.
Well, I do see that Mantis Rider, as a 3-drop creature is just really just a lot faster, too. It's more reliable.
Right.
You can come out with, as the last card in your hand, and
exactly,
it'll still do something. So, I mean, Mantis Rider at 3 toughness seems to be really strong right now.
And looking through your spells, I see one roast, four Ojutai's Command, four Crackling Doom, three fiery impulse, two Wild Slash, three Dig Through Time, and two Jeskai Charm. I haven't seen a lot of lists that have gone up to the full four Crackling Doom. Do you think that's just going forward going to be standard across the board for Jeskai Black, just four Crackling Doom?
Yeah, I think I saw this Jeskai Black list from the first weekend of SCG Open Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And I saw list playing Crackling Doom, and I wanted to play four just to test it out. And I think it's just the best removal spell in the deck. All the other ones are kind of situational, but there is a position where I'm facing down a Gideon Ally of Zendikar with a ally in play, and my board is only Soulfire Grandmaster, and I draw a Crackling Doom for turn, and I can kill his ally, get Gideon down to two, and then just kill Gideon. And that was just this card that I don't think any other card I could have drawn could have been easily that good. And it's just very powerful. I think it's good against Planeswalkers. It's good against their best creature. And there isn't really any way they can protect it. Protect their creature from Crackling Doom. So I definitely think it's the best removal spell.
Yeah, the fact that it, instead of how Foul Tongue Invocation works, where it's, you know, the target opponent sacrifices a creature, the fact that they have to sacrifice the creature with the largest power really makes the card a lot better, because it's not like you can sack an ally. If you have an activated Gideon, you have to sacrifice that Gideon. But speaking of Gideon, I see you're playing two. What are you doing with Gideon? Are you pumping out allies? Are you plussing it and going to the face? What do you use Gideon for?
It's mostly just a good threat that it's probably the best planeswalker in the format. And I would say it's probably the second best card behind Jace. A lot of decks are playing right now. I know the green-white deck, some Abzan variants, and obviously this Jeskai deck. Usually I just make some guys, keep pumping out allies, but it's also possible that, you know, if they're tapped out, or if I know that there's no card that can kill Gideon if I animate it, then I'll just make it a 5-5 and start being aggressive. And it's actually pretty good in the mirror, especially in game one, because there really isn't a good answer to it. You can Mantis Rider to attack it, but aside from that, it's kind of hard to answer a Planeswalker in the mirror. So just having a guy that makes constant threats, pumping out allies, is very powerful.
And then moving on to your land, it looks like a pretty, weirdly enough to say, standard mana base, in that you're running, you know, a ton of fetches, a ton of off-color duels. It seems like that's just the world we're living in. I did notice you were playing one Evolving Wilds, and I was wondering why that wasn't maybe a basic or another Bloodstained Mire, since you're only playing three.
So, yeah, Evolving Wilds, I think, is actually an important card in this deck, because Bloodstained Mire can't fetch for white, and that actually comes up very often, especially when you have cards like Mantis Rider and Gideon Ally of Zendikar that you really want to cast with white, and one of them that requires double white mana. You definitely want to get white mana very early. So being able to fetch for planes is very important. And I've had a lot of games in my testing come up where I had a Bloodstained Mire and it just couldn't fetch for white, and I lost the game because sitting on island, mountain, and black mana. And it definitely think that switching one to Evolving Wilds was important for me. And not losing a life isn't irrelevant either.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, playing 12 fetches is just like a ton of incremental life loss that it seems like. I mean, you have Soulfire Grandmaster to gain some life back, both from attacking and from the burn. But, you know, when you're playing the tempo game, when you're playing another aggressive deck, every life matters.
Yeah,
and so exactly. I can understand that, especially if you're trying to get Jace down turn one and you need to be able to have an untapped blue source on turn two. So looking at the sideboard, I see three Asharan Cleric, three Radiant Flame, one Tragic Arrogance, two Dispel, two Disdainful Stroke, two Outpost Siege, one Negate, and one Valorous Stance. Something that I've heard a lot of talk about regarding Asharan Cleric is that some people are saying Surge of Righteousness, some people are saying Asharan Cleric. I think the consensus is that you keep Asharan Cleric because of Ojutai's Command. But I wanted to hear if maybe you had different thoughts there, or if you wanted both.
Yeah, I definitely think that having the Ration Cleric is really important because of you have Ojutai's command. Surge of Righteousness is very good, but being able to return a Ration Cleric at instant speed and gain 7 life against red is just, it could be the game. And, you know, it usually trades for a creature and then while gaining you 3 life, and then it can come back, and that's just, it's just very powerful. And we have other removal to deal with cards where Surge of Righteousness is important. I would probably, moving forward, cut the Valorous Dance and either play a Murderous Cut or Cola Commits Command or some other removal spell. I think Valorous Dance is not very powerful right now in the format. It doesn't really kill too many creatures, and since people are playing cards like Crackling Doom, you can't even protect your creature like you used to be able to.
Okay, yeah, because, and it even seems like Valorous Dance would maybe be good in a deck that plays Monastery Mentor, where you're kind of playing a game where you're trying to protect one powerful card so it can continue to pump things out. But if you're not doing that and you're just playing everything is great, one spell that can potentially save one creature doesn't seem like it's worth it.
Yeah, and one of the cards that's actually pretty good against this deck is Silk Wrap. It's an enchantment that is kind of hard for me to remove. It's just a very good card against this deck because it'll exile a creature and then it's just gone forever and there's no way to get it back. And that's another card that Valorous Dance can't protect your creature from.
So what do these sideboard cards get brought in against? What are we playing? I mean, Asharan Cleric or Asharan Cleric, you know, that's obviously for the aggro, for the red matchup. Mm-hmm. What about Radiant Flames, Tragic Arrogance, Dispel, Disdainful Stroke? Like, where are those coming in and what are you taking out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So against mono red, the main cards that you're bringing in are the 3 Radiant Flames, the 3 Ration Cleric, 2 Dispel, and maybe a Negate, depending on what you kind of see game one and how you want to sideboard out cards. The other cards, I think, are very important as well. So the 5 counter spells that I have, those are for the Mirror as well as Esper Dragons and any other control deck or blue deck, basically. Outpost Siege, I think, is just an excellent card. It's one of my favorite cards, and it's good against pretty much any deck where you're trying to grind them out. It's great in the Mirror because they just can never remove it, just like any other enchantment. And it's great against Abzan if they don't have Dromoka's Command, and it's great against Esper Dragons as well. So the other cards, Tragic Arrogance, I would bring in against anything that's kind of creature heavy or enchantment heavy. So a lot of these cards are kind of very based on the previous metagame, since this one's not as defined yet, so they can definitely change moving forward. But I think one of the decks that I really wanted to focus on going into this event was mono red, so I wanted to have at least 8 sideboard cards for mono red to make that matchup good.
And that makes sense. I mean, putting it, time stamping this deck, the previous weekend, Star City Games Indianapolis was won by Atarka Red. So that makes a lot of sense. This past weekend, Green-White Megamorph put 2 decks in the finals, knocking out Jeskai Black in both semifinals. Is that a deck that you're planning on tweaking the sideboard for? Are you thinking about cards like Self-Inflicted Wound, or where are you going with this?
Yeah, there's definitely that's definitely one of the decks that people will start metagaming for, and definitely one that I want to prepare for more. I think one of the cards that I want to add is Murderous Cut for the Valor Stance, and that's just, I think, a lot better of a card. It'll kill everything in their deck. And maybe Wraths are a good option, too, against that deck. I think one of the weaknesses, actually, of the Jeskai decks that lost in that top 4 was actually having the Monastery Mentor and even Hangarback Walker. Hangarback Walker is extremely embarrassing against Silk Wrap because they exile it, and then even if you get it back, it dies. And Monastery Mentor, I think, is not very good against that matchup either, because it's just a ground creature where they just gum up the ground, and their creatures either have Death Touch or Evasion with Deathmist Raptor and Den Protector. And I think building my deck to be more about Jace and Mantis Rider is very good and much better against their deck. And I think their deck actually has a lot of trouble killing, for example, a Dragon Master Outcast. The 2 best cards in their deck against me are Dromoka's Command and Silk Wrap, so I think minimizing the effect of those 2 cards is important.
And just thinking out loud right now, I remember back from the previous standard when Abzan Control
versus Abzan Megamorph really came down to whether or not the Abzan control player could land an Elspeth and just flood the board with tokens to just continually chump block the Deathmiss Raptors. Is that what Gideon right. does in this matchup? Is that what Gideon's role is? You just keep pumping out allies, so you're never going to have to be able to permanently remove Deathmiss Raptor, so you might as well just kind of put roadblocks in front of it?
Yeah, I think Gideon's important in that matchup, and also dig through time, just being able to, you know, grind them out. The best way to play against the deck is get into a position where you can remove their creatures and then just sit on Ochu's Eyes Command and dig through time. And then they're either forced to cast creatures where you can Cryptic Command and draw a card, or you can just, if they don't cast anything to play around that, you just dig through time and get your two best spells, and then you can start taking control of the game.
Okay, and so speaking of taking control of the game, we've gone through the deck list, kind of some of the sideboarding as well. Now I want to talk about some key sequences and important lines of play that we should keep an eye out for. So, you know, maybe it's turn three, maybe it's turn four. What do you want the board to look like? And what key sequences do you just hope you have in your hand so you can just do, you know, turn three, turn four, turn five, I win the game?
You just want to cast a Jace turn two, and I think that's just the most important card in the deck. I like to play it more as a control deck and not get too, you know, aggressive. I think there's times where on turn three, if my opponent has a board, I'd rather just not cast Mantis Rider. I'd rather just remove their creature. But obviously all of this is very situational. But I think just playing it as a control deck, I think it actually has a very good late game. And you can get in positions where you just want to trade one card for two of theirs. You just want to get a lot of two-for-ones. A lot of your cards are two-for-ones. For example, Ojutai's Command, Crackling Doom can be a two-for-one. You can create two-for-ones with Soulfire Grandmaster. And then in the late game, if you can use Soulfire to start returning cards to your hand when you cast them with the ability, then that's just very powerful.
Okay. Just a flashback real quick to the discussion of the deck list. You speaking of two-for-ones just reminded me of another card that I saw on some lists and I don't see here, and that's Brutal Expulsion. It's by definition a two-for-one because you can pick one mode, the other, or both. Is there a reason you didn't play that card? Is it just too much mana?
Yeah, I think it's a bit too much mana, and I think it's a decent card, but I didn't want to get too cute with the deck list. I didn't want to try anything that wasn't really proven in my mind. I really wanted to go very stock and go very, you know, these are the cards that I know are good. I'm going to play these cards.
Yeah, and that's a totally fine strategy. You know, you're playing to win. You're not playing for style points.
Exactly.
Okay, so in the mirror, or even the semi-mirror, if it's just straight Jeskai, if you were to lose game one, would you choose to play first, or would you play on the draw, hoping to play a more controlling role, you know, Fiery Insight their Jace, then land your own? Which position do you think you want to be in the mirror?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Previously, I think being on the draw had its benefits, but ever since they printed Jace, I think it's just super important to be on the play. Because if you can be able to play Jace on the play and have it go unanswered, it will easily take over the game. There aren't that many ways to kill Jace when it comes down. It's basically just the Fiery Impulse, Wild Slashes, and if you're on the draw correctly, if you get to three mana before Jace flips, Crackling Doom can do something, but otherwise, if it flips, good luck. So I think you definitely want to be on the play in that matchup.
That makes sense. I mean, especially since you're playing Mantis Rider. So if you're right. playing a turn two Jace, they spend their turn killing Jace. You play Mantis Rider, get in for three. They're just on the back foot responding to everything. And if they don't kill Jace, you have a Jace, and that's amazing.
Exactly, and also being the first player to have Ojutai's Command mana up is very important as well.
Okay, that's interesting. Against Green-White Megamorph, is that just the same thing? Like, is it basically you have a plan, you want to hew as close to the plan as possible in every matchup, or are there some matchups where maybe you deviate a little bit? And where do you, basically, what matchups do you go just controlling from the start?
I think against a deck like Mono Red, I definitely want to be very controlling because I know they're the aggressive deck, and I just want to cast, for example, my removal spells very early and play a Soulfire and just start playing my removal spells after that as well and gaining life. One of the matchups where you want to be very controlling is against the Rally and Collected Company decks. And I think that matchup where you have Dispel is very good, and also just being able to kill their creatures and not let them get too out of control with their rallies. Definitely want to be, holding up negates and Disdainful Stroke and Dispel every turn if you can, going into the mid and late game.
Yeah, and especially since that deck has kind of taken on kind of an Aristocrats feel where it's playing
right. The
Zulaport Cutthroat, and
yeah. If
you try and aggro them out and just let them get out of control, they can just sack a bunch of things, gain a bunch of life, and hit you with Nantuka Husk for
right.
a bunch.
Exactly.
So the last question about sequencing, and it's weird that we have to talk about this, but given the way our lands are right now, it's actually one of the most important questions, I think. How do you fetch in the first three turns? Do you fetch basics? Do you play a Mystic Monastery? Or do you play your if you have, a fetch and a check duel or battle land, do you play that first? How do you sequence your lands?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think the lands right now are just, they can actually make turn one very difficult. Before, you kind of just played your temple and scryed usually, or you played your tri-land. Now, it's probably one of the toughest decisions of the game. There's often turn one where you have to decide between either you want to fetch a basic or you want to fetch a dual land to play tapped. I think one of the most important things is being able to get two basics into play as soon as possible, while not hindering your own game plan, hindering you from casting spells. Generally, if I have a Jace and if I have any other basic, I'll fetch for a duel and then play my basic and play Jace. But obviously, I think situations and obviously the mana that you draw for the game can be very challenging. So I think it's definitely very important to get two basics into play as soon as possible. And if you have, three fetch lands in a play, you can easily go basic, basic, duel, and then every fetch land you draw after that and every duel you draw after that will come to play untapped.
Do you have situations where you run out of fetchable cards? Does that happen often? Because I know you're running a lot of fetch lands.
Yeah, so looking at the list right now, there are 12 fetchable lands, so I haven't had any situations where I couldn't fetch for anything, but even when games go long, I think you'll be able to have something to fetch for, even if it's not ideally. For example, you might want to get a blue land, but there's only Smoldering Marsh or Mountain left, but at least it's a land that you can get, and you're not fetching for nothing.
Okay, great. So the next thing I want to talk about is good and bad matchups. I mean, the format isn't really that defined, but I mean, we can kind of go off like the Star City Games results and things like that. How do you feel about, some of the more prominent matchups, like maybe Abzan Aggro? It wasn't in the top eight of Atlanta, but it was in Indianapolis. In Indianapolis, it was 25% of the day two field. So what matchups do you like? What matchups do you not like? And what maybe strategies are you afraid of, but you haven't seen yet?
Yeah. So some of the good matchups I think for this deck are, Tarka Red, I think is actually good. Esper Dragons and, Abzan Aggro, I think is actually a good matchup. And I think, just the prominence of Jeskai Black in this tournament is probably the reason why Abzan Aggro was, less a part of the day two metagame. I was told that Jeskai Black was 50% of the metagame on day two of the Open. I think it was in Atlanta this past weekend. And Abzan Aggro is obviously a much smaller part of the metagame compared to the 25% the week before. I think some of the bad matchups for the deck are decks that utilize enchantments. For example, Jeskai Ascendancy decks, I think, actually will pose to be a tough matchup just because it's tough to remove the card Jeskai Ascendancy. I think some of those like Blister Pod decks with Abzan Ascendancy can be tough. And Hardened Scales is actually, while some might not take it seriously, is actually a tough matchup if you just can't get rid of the Hardened Scales. And also Eldrazi Ramp. If they cast, they're really easy, it's really easy for those decks to just get to Ulamog and then they just cast it. And since this deck is more controlling than in the past and less aggressive, It's tough for us to pressure them fast enough before they can get Ulamog in play.
Now, when you say just guy ascendancy, I actually haven't seen many of those lists out there. Is that playing the Merfolk that makes your lands into awakened creatures, or have you seen the list out in the wild and played against it?
I haven't seen too many of them, but in the past, I know that the Jeskai Tokens deck was generally pretty good against the Jeskai Aggro decks, and I think now, before we used to play cards like Abzan Advantage and Erase, and right now, at least my current list, I have no enchantment removal at all, so if they are able to play a Jeskai Ascendancy, and I don't have my one negate, then I'm probably not going to win, and I think that's an area where people can take advantage and play cards that are, you know, get, I think people can play cards that attack the weakness of this Jeskai deck, which is difficulty dealing with enchantments.
So, I mean, the Pro Tour is this weekend, and Star City Games States is this weekend for those not going to the Pro Tour. Do you think that Jeskai Black is going to be public enemy number one? Do you think it's going to be that and Green White Aggro? Or Megamorph, where do you think the metagame's going to be this weekend?
Yeah, I think I would not be surprised at all if Jeskai Black is the most popular deck. In the PPTQ that I played, the top four was all Jeskai Black decks. And you could just tell that everyone realizes this is a powerful deck, and it's a ton of fun to play, and you can really tune your deck to beat pretty much anything. And I think people will, you know, take that data, take the data from the Indianapolis Open, the Atlanta Open, and just, you know, pick up this deck and play it.
All right, so let's go over some hands from the deck, and you can talk us through, you know, whether these are keepable, borderline, totally, you'd mull them, and this is something that is really good, especially since we're going to be mulliganing, I think, a lot more now that the Vancouver Scry rule is in effect, and you can get rid of those iffy sevens and have a great six, knowing that you're going to draw a great card. So the first hand is Plains, Evolving Wilds, Bloodstained Mire, Polluted Delta, Smoldering Marsh, Wild/Fiery Impulse. So two removal spells and five land.
Okay, so in the blind, I would definitely just mulligan this hand. I think it's got way too many lands, and you can easily just mulligan to a hand that has some sort of action. And let's say you're playing against Esper Dragons, for example. This is just a mold of five already, since your two burn spells don't do anything. So I definitely think this is a very obvious mull. The only matchup where I might even consider keeping this hand is if I'm playing against Tarka Red and they're on the plan, they already mulligan to six. Then I would consider keeping this hand, but otherwise there's no way I would keep this hand.
Another hand, another seven, I think this is also probably a borderline hand as well, is Prairie Stream, Sunken Hollow, Plains, Bloodstained Mire, Wild/, and then two Ogitize commands. Is that too slow as well?
That's actually, I think this hand is a much better hand because you get in a position where their first creature, say it's you know, either a morph or some early creature, you can just kill it with the Wild/, and then you get in a position where you can just start Ogitize commanding their creatures, and anything you draw off the top probably helps with dealing with either the threats or they are threats on their own. This is a hand I would actually probably keep.
So would you play turn one Bloodstained Mire so you can fetch a mountain in case you need a turn one a Wild/?
I think what I would do is actually I would play either the Prairie Stream or Sunken Hollow. And then I guess this also depends on the play draw, but most likely I would just play the Dual Land tapped on turn one. Because if I draw Jace, then I can fetch for a mountain and play Jace right away. And I think I can follow up the mountain with the plains, and then I'll play the Sunken Hollow after that, and then I have two duels, two plains, a mountain, and there's also two white sources in there and two blue sources, which I think is actually pretty good.
And for the first Ogitize command, let's say they play a Hidden Dragon Master unmorphed for God knows what reason, and you wild slash it, then you're at 4 mana. They play, let's say, a Deathmist Raptor. Do you counter draw card? Do you counter gain 4 life? What modes do you use in the beginning of the game with Ojedai's Command?
I think in the beginning, definitely you want to draw a card and be able to cycle through your deck to find your best cards. I probably wouldn't gain 4 life unless I'm at a very critical life total, below 5 life, or maybe a little more than that against a more aggressive deck. But I think definitely early on, if they're casting Deathmist Raptor and I can counter draw, I'm doing it.
If you have played a Jace and you have a Jace in your graveyard, do you almost always put Jace into play as one of the modes?
So you mean with if I have a Jace in play and then...
If you have a Jace, you're casting Ojedai's Command. You have a Jace in the graveyard. You're playing Ojedai's Command to counter a spell. Is putting Jace from the graveyard into play always just the best thing to be doing? Just getting a Jace into play on top of countering a spell?
I think so. I think that's probably one of the reasons why Ojedai's Command and Jace, and even just this deck in general, is just one of the best decks because you can do that. In a way, it's even better than Cryptic Command is because you get to just return your best card in your entire deck and entire format from your graveyard to play instead of drawing a random card. And I think that's ridiculous.
It's a way to get a Planeswalker out there via Ojedai's Command, essentially. It's just there's too much going on there.
Yeah, I think it could be even more than a 2-for-1 with the Jace.
Okay, so I have another hand. This time, we mold that first hand down to 6.
Okay.
We ended up with a Flooded Strand, a Bloodstained Mire, a Prairie Stream, Fiery Impulse, Dragon Master Outcast, Ojedai's Command. This seems like a snap keep to me.
Yeah, I would definitely snap keep that hand. You have you can fetch for 2 basics and have Prairie Stream, or you can, depending on how you draw, you can even set it up with your Scry to just to have another land or have a Mantis Rider or a Jace. I think this hand's very good. It's got a removal spell, a threat that a little slow, but either it dies and you can return it with Ojedai's Command, or it lives to turn 6, and it just takes over the game.
Do you just play it turn 1? Just put it out there, knowing you can get it back?
Yeah, I think I'm fine playing it turn 1. I don't really care if it dies, since you have the Ojedai's Command, so if it deals a few points of damage, that's great, but if it dies, no problem.
Yeah, because it's eating a removal spell that would get Jace, so it did its job.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Another hand, also a mold of 6. This one's a little less mana friendly. So we have a Smoldering Marsh, a Polluted Delta, Wild Slash, Fiery Impulse, Gideon, Ojedai's Command.
I think because this hand has a Delta instead of a Sunken Hollow, I think it's actually a keep. You get to scry one, so you get to see, you definitely want to draw land, obviously, in this hand. And I think be able to scry, for example, another Ojedai's Command to the bottom or something that you don't really want early, like a Dig Through Time to the bottom, is very important. And I think this is where you see the power of that scry rule, being able to just help you mold your open hand a little bit more. And I think this hand's actually fine. The Gideon is a little hard to cast early on, but you have the 2 early interaction, Wild Slash and Fire Impulse, to deal with anything early to buy you some time anyways. And that's where Ojedai's Command and Gideon can take over.
And assuming you have something you want on the top of your deck, you're going to play Smoldering Marsh turn 1 because you want to be able to untap, use your burn spells, and not have to waste a fetch on an untapped red source.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. With the Scry rule, how likely would you be to go to 5 from a mediocre 6, knowing that if you keep it, you have the ability to control the top of your deck?
I try not... Well, I guess it really depends how aggressive you want to be with the mulliganing. I would probably not mulligan unless I had a very land-light hand. For example, 1-lander is almost always a mulligan, but if there's a 2-lander and I can cast 1 to 2 spells, I'm most likely going to keep.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think we just really nailed down a lot about this deck in the Keeps and Mulligans. It didn't seem that hard, but maybe that's just because the deck is just four of great cards and pretty consistent mana. So we talked about the sideboard, we talked about the main, and a lot of our discussion of the sideboard was what to change. Are there cards in the main board that you're thinking about changing going forward?
Yeah, some of the cards in the deck overall that I didn't think were especially good that I might switch out are the Jeskai Charms. And in the sideboard, I would say the Valorous Stance, maybe the Tragic Arrogance. But yeah, I think those were the cards that weren't super high impact. I think moving forward, what I most likely would do is switch the Jeskai Charm for Kolaghan's Command and maybe play two of those. And in the sideboard, I would probably just cut the Valor Stance and play either a Murderous Cut or maybe find room for some Silk Wrap somewhere in the deck. I think those are some of the cards that are pretty good moving forward. But I think definitely Jeskai Charm was mainly in the deck as a card that lets you deal with Hangerback Walker, which is actually, if it gets very big, it's actually kind of a problem for this deck to deal with. So I wanted to play Jeskai Charm. And even against Mono Red, being able to lifelink can sometimes just end the game on the spot. So I thought that was pretty good. But against pretty much if the decks are all mirrors, you don't really need that card. It's not good in the mirror. I side it out every time I play against the mirror. So I think that's a card that I would cut, as well as the Valor Stance.
If you weren't playing this deck at Star City Games States or, you know, the next upcoming big standard event, what deck are you looking at to play besides Jeskai Black? Or is Jeskai Black just far and away the best deck? You're not even looking at anything else?
Yeah, so I think one of the decks that I'm looking at that if I weren't going to play this deck is an Abzan deck with red spells. Or just a small red splash. I think Abzan is due for a resurgence, and I think there's ways to build it to make it good again. I think the way that it's built right now with the aggressive Abzan deck, it's not going to be good against Jeskai Black, but I think there's ways to tune the Abzan deck. So the deck's just way too powerful with cards like Anafenza and Siege Rhino. I mean, it's just some of the best cards in the format. So I think it's definitely you have to adjust a little bit and be able to deal with Jace and Mantis Rider, and I think that's one of the ways that you can attack the format, and something that I'm definitely interested in working on.
Yeah, I mean, and Jeremy probably knows that what you just said was music to my ears, because I have been playing or continue to play Abzan through rotation, and you know, it hasn't always worked out. Last night I went 3-1 at a win a box. And got, you know, 7 packs, but, you know, I'm of the opinion that I think it's a pretty solid deck. There are a lot of ways to tune it.
You were toying around with red mana.
Yep. And so not to go too much off on a tangent, but just to let you know where I'm at, since we have talked about it on the podcast, is that essentially taking, you know, the Abzan control shell, realizing that we're no longer a control deck because we lost Elspeth. Ugin is no longer as good. You're not going to have Elspeth to let you get to Ugin. So I've essentially made it an Abzan mid-range deck. So 2 Obnixilis, 3 Wingmate Rock, 2 Sorin, 4 Siege Rhino, 3 Nissa, 3 Den Protector, 1 Dragonlord Dromoka. And then also playing Murderous Cut, Reeve Soul, Ultimate Price, Utter End, and then, you know, still 26 land, but one of the things that I've found is just absolutely cutting all of the pain land. So playing 4 Wooded Foothills, 3 Windswept Heath, 3 Canopy Vista, 2 Smoldering Marsh, 4 Shambling Vent, has been really consistent. You're always able to hit your black mana with the ability to fetch a Smoldering Vent and playing Shambling Vent, which is great. But that's neither here nor there. But I think the list has potential, and I'm interested to see if anyone picks it up for the Pro Tour and takes it somewhere more respectable.
Yeah, I can almost certainly guarantee that there will be some Abzan decks at the Pro Tour. So I think it'll be interesting to see what cards they use and how they build it. But I think that it's definitely a strategy that is still good moving forward. And the list you just mentioned sounds very good. And that's something that I'll definitely try to work on myself as well. Because we constantly need to evolve to attack the metagame.
Yeah, and Abzan Charm, I mean, Abzan Charm's great against Mantis Rider, so any deck that fits Abzan Charm in right now seems like it has a pretty good fight against Jeskai, and Mortuary Mire is a pretty ridiculous card, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a card I can see.
You know, you're playing three Den Protector, and you're playing a Mortuary Mire, putting a Den Protector back on the top of your library so you can do ridiculous things. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about this. Anything else you want to add going forward?
No, I think that's all. I really thank you for the opportunity, and that was a lot of fun. So I hope people learn a lot from my summary of the deck, and they're able to, you know, win their states or win any other event they're playing with this deck.
Next week, Keenan, Matt Wall's coming to Portland, Oregon. He's visiting live, and we're going to do an extra special modern podcast. Are you excited about elves?
I'm pumped. I don't know what he's bringing, but he's going to get beat by elves. He's going to get beat by goblins. He's going to get beat just like he got beat Boston.
Back in the day.
All this podcast glory has gone to his head, and he's finally ready to avenge himself.
All right, well, next week, be sure to tune in, shufflingrandomly.com.